take it as it comes. And part of the process too is we got a little educated, and we used to take hollow logs and seed a creek, maybe a section of the creek. We always had to put names on them, like Gator Creek or some lake, you know, off of it. And we'd take these hollow logs and put them in there. And after a while, with all the thrashing around the water, the fish would go in these hollers, and you'd get somebody on one end, and they'd block the hole, and somebody on the other end blocked the hole, and out you'd come with it and take it on the hill and dump it out. So that was kind of a cheating, I guess, but I could say we went to catch some fish, and that was a process of survival. Back in them swamps where I grew up, was we went to play, but we were serious about our playing. So that was a lot of fun to us, and it's the way I learned to swim too.
Bobby, we used to call that noodling back in Missouri.
Noodling?
Yeah, noodling. When the river would come up, you know, get along them creek banks and get down there and sort of feel them on the belly like that, you know, and sort of get up and get them gills, you know.
Yeah. Could you weigh them? Did you pick them out, you know, with them scales on them?
No, what we usually did, though, we tried to stay away from the big, round, long ones.
Yeah, you didn't want none of them spaghetti fish.
No.
Now, I know Bobby used to catch a few other things besides fish.
Yeah. Yeah, occasionally they, we did catch a few turtles and a few gators, and I don't know where y'all know anybody that lives up in New York that's got some gators, but chances are I sold them to them a few years ago. But we used to catch a lot of baby gators, and that's when it was okay to do that. But a lot of those old holes on the river, you know, you'd catch those little baby gators and get down there on Highway 101 and sell a few of them. Good sized little gator, get $2 or $3 for it. My daddy was making 50 cents a day, and he thought I'd done went to college and I'd come home with all that money. But it was a lot of fun. Like I say, everything we did had a purpose, but in the purpose, you tried to enjoy it. And if you needed to make something, like you're talking about the traps and all, that's what you done. You did what you had to do, and so that's about it on that part, Patricia.
All right. I guess we might as well go ahead and keep talking. If somebody needs help, we can't help them, so we'll go ahead and listen. Now, you're a mullet fisherman too, aren't you? Tell us about that process. That's a local specialty besides.
Well, there's one thing about it. I've amazed a lot of people, and a lot of people are absolutely amazed too, is the fact that we have a tremendous run of freshwater mullet in the Apalachicola River as far up as Chattahoochee, Florida. Now that's 110 river miles from the Gulf Coast, and surprisingly enough, Lake Seminole is full of mullet, freshwater mullet. Here about 3 years ago, we got over there above the dam in number one turbine hole at Jim Woodruff Dam, and they allowed us to snatch mullet out of there with treble hooks. And we were taking some river mullet that had gone into the lake and got trapped up there. We were taking some of that mullet that go out to 7.5 and 8 pounds. Now that, my friend, is a very, very large mullet. And every one of them rowed out with about 1.5 pounds of roe in each one of them. The difference between the freshwater mullet and the saltwater mullet, we find that the freshwater mullet's a lot sweeter fish. And the river mullet, I believe, are indigenous now. I don't believe they go back to the Gulf at all. I think they stay right in that river year-round. And I've got a commercial fishing license that I paid for many times over, but I've been catching mullet over there. I caught about 200 pounds the week before last and about 100 pounds last week. Now, this is just casting a net right off of the parking lot down there below Jim Woodruff Dam. And we're taking mullet down there right now to run 1.5 pounds, 2 pounds apiece, and awful lot of little buck mullet this time of the year too, but I work, like I said, at Florida State Hospital, and I have an awful lot of people up there that likes their mullet. And I get 50 cents a pound for them up there, and it keeps me in fishing tackle and licenses and rods and reels and everything else. But I also take my surplus mullet and I smoke them. And I've been smoking mullet for 30, 35 years off and on. But I don't hurry my mullet smoking like a lot of people do. I don't barbecue my mullet. I take my larger mud that run three and a half pounds a piece and split them down the back. Take the heads off of them, soak them in brine for about an hour and a half. Put them on a slow hickory and oak fire for about 9, sometimes 12 hours. Then when they're just about where they're getting a little dried, where they're starting to come out real good, I'll hit them with a good old homemade recipe of barbecue and hot sauce. Put them back in for about another hour. They firm up real good. And I've had people come in and break into my house at night, getting into my freezer, getting them out. Who is that strange man out in the freezer? I don't know, but he smells like he's got mullet all over his fingers.
When you get talking about fishing, you pretty quickly, as you've discovered, get into the eating. And we've got a few other cooking experts here with us, so I think I'll let a couple of my panelists slide off and get Mr. Buckles to come on up, and we'll continue this conversation. We'll get
up,
the fish fry man. Come on.
Yeah, Mr. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
If you want to, you want to talk about it.
He told me a few things yesterday that made me hungry, so I tell him he's got to stay. Mr. Buckles hasn't had his chance yet, so you talked about other things yesterday, but I also happen to know this man is a champion barbecuer in two senses. One is that he's good at it, and the other is that he does it for the champion folks who he works for. We got our last fish fryer here. But anyway, tell us about your specialty here.
Well, I don't know whether there's anything special about it. I just love to barbecue. Anything that'll hold still, I'll put it on a grill and cook on it a while. I love to barbecue pork ribs, chicken, and occasionally we have a little cookout for our Flagler County Cattlemen Association. We cook about 2,700 pounds of beef, and we just take our time. Like the gentleman said, we don't rush it. We cook it slow and easy. That tender loving care is what makes it go good. I'm not one to put a lot of sauce or things on my meat when I'm cooking it. I cook it without it. And if anybody wants the sauce, I feel like a good piece of meat, you don't have to have sauce for it to taste good.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Tell us about the process and how long does it take? What's the whole?
Well, it depends on what I'm cooking. When we barbecued our beef for the Cattlemen's Association, they came in 20 to 30 pound pieces. And we cooked them about 14 hours. Real slow, turning it regular. A piece of beef, to me, if you get it too hot too quick, it'll crust on the outside and you can't get it cooked through. Piece of pork's a little different, but beef, you've got to kind of, you got to play with it a little bit to make it come out like you want it.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you actually do this for the folks at the place where you work or used to work, or is that?
Just a hobby.
Hobby.
When everybody around the office wants to have a cookout, they say, well, Pop, how about you getting out there and get the grill going? So it's just a hobby. It's nothing that I do for profession, I'd say.
Not for profession. All right. Well, next to him, we have, that was Victor Buckles. I didn't introduce him properly. Next to him, we have Gary Yant, who is a professional fish cooker, gets called upon for this festival. Some of you may have had his fish, or you can have some in a little bit. But now, how did you get into this? It's a local specialty, but not necessarily for you. You have a different story.
Well, first of all, professional is a nice name, but professional merely means that I get paid to do it. Doesn't mean I'm real good at it. Fish comes from my grandfather on my father's side. He was a chef in a seafood restaurant in New Orleans for many years until he retired. My father taught me a little bit about seafood. I was amazed when I moved to Florida to find out that mullet was something that people ate. You don't do that in Louisiana. And catfish, of course, everyone likes catfish. And the catfish that you find in this river are kind of unique because they have a forked tail. So if anyone tries to fool you into saying that they're Swanee catfish, you can tell the difference. I cut the tails off our fish, so.
We noticed that.
It's all Swanee catfish. I want y'all to know that. We've cooked big groups, like Mr. Buckles was talking about. I've never done as big a group as this for fish, but I've done it, the beef and the pork and things like that. We specialize mainly in steaks in our deli. Our catfish dinners that we serve on Fridays have become a local famous dish, and we use pond-raised catfish. It gives a good, even size. Everybody doesn't feel, well, no one feels that they're getting cheated because somebody got bigger fishes than they got. It makes the local folks feel like they're special when we talk about catfish, because we are in Suwannee County area. Suwannee River's right over there. And it's a local dish that we have a lot of pride in.
Thank you, and it tastes good too. Now, your sister-in-law over there was telling me stories that you take your cooker with you on out when you go fishing and sort of create a party around you. Is this an accurate description? Tell us about that, Mr. Palmer. I'm looking at you.
Yeah. Well, we've been known to do that. We have a very unique bunch of gentlemen over there we call the Dam Fishermen. That's Jim Woodruff Dam. And we go over and catch a hybrid bass and striped bass and the catfish, and we've been known just to throw them out on the bank over there and just have big fish fry Johnny on the spot. But I wanted to mention something else, too. Now, I'm sort of unique when it comes to cooking fish and trying exotic fish. I've got a lot of Indian friends. I sit on Northwest Florida Creek Indian Council, as my wife does also for the state of Florida. We have a lot of good Indian friends on all the reservations, and I have been indoctrinated to eating garfish, river gar, not like the Indians do down the reservation, though. I get the river gar down here, and I'll skin him with the aid of a pair of tin snips and take them loins off the side of them. And I cook mine very slow with salt and pepper until they get pretty well done. Set them back, let them cool, then I grate them up and make fish balls out of them. Or I make gar stew out of them. And people turn their nose up at it, but it's a very, very good fish, and we enjoy it thoroughly. My Indian friends on the reservation, and also the Indians back as far as 2,000 years of the Deptford civilization that I studied when I was studying archaeology, they took the gar, caught the gar, split him right down the belly, and popped his belly open with sticks, and placed him upside down in a bed of coals. And the gar cooked right in his own shell and was served right out of his own shell. And we found remains of fish back as far as 2000 BP, and there were the gar scales. We find alligator scutes, we find metatarsal bones from turtles, we find gar scales. That's the three things you'll find in a prehistoric Indian site. If you ever go around, you find gar scales or metatarsal bones from turtles, you know you got you an ancient Indian site there. But I try it all. I smoke gar. I make gar jerky. I make shark jerky. Smoke catfish. I do about everything there is to do except eat them river mussels. Dan Townsend down here does the shell carving, uses my river mussels that I get out of the Chappalachicola River when it's down. You see them big pretty shells down there, that's the ones I furnish Dan with. But if you eat them mussel meat down there now, you probably light up like a neon light when they turn the lights out due to all the mercury and stuff in the water. But I can probably give you some hair-tingling tales about the fish I've tried eating and what they've done. But like I said, I don't know too much about it.
We'll let Bobby and maybe we'll get back to those. Now, I know that you got talking with Mr. Buckles yesterday about some unusual things that you've caught and eaten. I don't know which you'd like to talk about. I'll let you pick your own story.
Well, we were talking about the mullet a while ago. I didn't know there was anything else for a long time, but I thoroughly love mullet. We do a lot of things with mullet. These gentlemen have said, you fry them, you bake them, you smoke them. And one thing I like to do with it is we make something we call Lisa. And that's a process of canning mullet. And you can vary your recipe by if you like it hot or to have different types of flavors to it. Just depends on what, you know, your particular specialty might be. You can add it to the old mullet, and it'll adapt real well to it. But I like to throw the old mullet net and catch a few. And when you get a lot of mullet, there's not a lot of things I never could freeze them and enjoy them. So if you can't give them away or something, you hate to waste them. So if you can up some Lisa, you can keep them. And then on some of those cold winter days, you kind of just open a jar of them and get you some of them premium saltine crackers and and just sit there and eat them out, right out of the jar, and they're very good. And I like to put jalapeno peppers in mine, and it kind of gives you just a little kick there that is real nice. But that's something we like, you know, over in Pensacola. Mm-hmm. It's you know, we're kind of famous over there.
Yeah,
I guess that's kind of one of the capitals of mullet.
I think they tried to change the name of mullet years ago back there. The commercial mullet industry tried to change it to Lisa, didn't they?
Yeah, they may have. Yeah, that's why many years ago they tried to do that to commercialize it.
That's right.
It just didn't take off for some reason or other. So.
People wouldn't accept mullet, but they tried to call it Lisa. Right?
Us old crackers went right on back and called it a mullet.
Yeah,
you gentlemen are pretty versed in cooking, and maybe you can tell me how you fix alligator. Any of y'all ever cooked any alligator? I never have cooked any of it. I have took the britches off of many a one of them, and the meat's just as pretty as any catfish meat you want to look at. But I just couldn't get past the smell on that alligator. So, and you say you've tried some of it?
I've cooked it.
You put a lot of garlic and onion on it. That kind of can about fix anything when you do that, can't you?
Yeah, well, you know, you can. But one of the ways that I really liked alligator it was just the tail section. And slice it pretty thin, and just bread it, and fry it. Now, usually before I cooked it, I like to, I guess you call it marinate it. Put the meat in some cold water, and you know, you make pepper sauce for your collard greens and things. And I like to pour a little of that pepper sauce into the water, and put it in the refrigerator and let it sit overnight, and then I'd take it out and. Start the next process of cooking it, you know, and I just like to fry it, and that's the way that we cook most of the gator at my house, but it was fairly common on our table. We had a lot of gators in our area, and we tried to utilize everything.
How did you catch it?
Well, you put salt on the tail. No, you don't do that. There's just so many ways to catch a gator. My daddy used to catch them with a striking iron he used. That was another process of fishing we used. I might just tell you about striking. If some of you folks ever done any striking, when the water gets up good and high in the fall of the year, get a lot of rain, the water runs out into the swamps and all out in the trees, and it's usually about knee deep. You get out there with a piece of iron and about that long, and get you bend it over and make you a nice handle on it. Take your light and wade around out in the shallow water, and when you just see one, you just hit him, and it stuns him, and that's called striking. And that's another one of those methods where you don't have to have any fancy equipment to get some fish. But and a lot of times we'd have a gator to, you know, get involved in it. We tried to get young gators, maybe 3-4 foot, you know, gator like that. Sometimes you can catch them in the seines, and sometimes we'd just get out in the creeks, you know, and roll along in a boat, you know, and shine the eyes, and you just pull up alongside of them. And the trick was we had a little old 22 single shot rifle, and you got to pop him and reach and get him right now, you know, because he'll sink on you. And that was another way we caught the gator. But there was plenty of gator at that time, and usually it wasn't a problem.
Bobby.
Yes, sir.
Yesterday they were discussing about the gopher reaching down with a pole with a kind of hook on and pull him out. That's the way we used to do the gators back when I was a young fella. You'd find his cave, and you had a hook on the end of a long pole, and you'd reach down in that cave, and you'd hook that gator under the bill if you was lucky, or some other place, and you pulled him out. And sometimes when you had a gator 8 or 10 foot long, he pulled back some. And then you always carried a little hatchet. We never did carry no 22. We couldn't afford no bullets for a 22. We had a little old hatchet, and when you pulled the gator out, you got the hatchet, when you felt him kind of get a little close to the mouth of the cave and you felt a little slack going on the pole, you needed to get the hatchet quick because he was coming on to get amongst you then. You had to be a little quick to chop him in the head. And I don't know whether how you skint yours, but we always used to have a problem skinning a gator. He didn't want to lay still to take the britches off that rascal. So you had to chop him right back of the head there and get you a grapevine and run right down his spine, and that killed all that nerve in there, so he'd quit doing all that twitching while you was trying to skin him. Did you ever have that problem with him, Bobby?
Yeah, that is a problem.
They will wiggle and twist if you don't. That's all nerve down that spine, and he does want to turn around and grab at things. Of course, like I said, I never ate any gator. I just never had no desire. I used to skin them for a living when I was a young fellow. Get $1.298 for the hide, and we'd skin them and salt them and roll them up. Then the hide buyer would come by once or twice a year and buy the hides from us. Of course, that's getting off in the cooking a little bit, but that's kind of in with the catching of the gator to cooking.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
They done got modern now. I think they got a stun gun and all kinds of good things you go out and do to him, but when he's dead, he's dead. When you chopped him in the head with a hatchet or 22 or whatever.
They use them bang sticks on him now.
That's what it is. Yeah.
Shark
yeah. You got to go get some training to learn how to kill him and all that.
You know, and listen to these guys, it might sound just a little cruel, but we were serious. You know, what we caught, we ate.
That's right.
We used all parts. Those gator hides, they didn't bring a lot in them days, but they helped, you know. They didn't give that salt away and stuff. You picked up a few pennies there, but, you know, you kind of fed the family. It was serious business in my house.
And, the old hide buyer, he'd come by to get your hides, and he'd get out, he'd unroll it. He'd feel around on it and say, hey, this one ain't no good. Got a butt in it, and he'd find a hard place on the scales. Or the old gator might have laid out in the sun a little bit long, and some of the scales would peel off the hide. So he'd say, well, I don't want this one. I'll give you 25 cents for this one. Might be a 10-foot gator. But $1.50 to $2 is all you could get back in the late 30s for a gator hide.
Something else I know that some of these folks have eaten is gopher. With different processes. Somebody want to take up that tale?
Well, I sure eat my mess of them, I tell you. Land tortoise or gopher, is whichever name you might know it as. We always call them just old gophers. And out in these scrub oak patches and sand beds, and we'd find some gopher holes and seen where there's some activity around the holes, and my process was take a 5-gallon lard bucket and dig a hole right in front of the hole, bury it, put a few sticks and twigs over it, and the old gopher would crawl out and fall in the can, and it kind of worked. Every day we'd make about two trips around. We called it our trap line, and we just go to each can and get the gators out. If they were too small, we turned them loose, and if they was too big, we didn't catch them anyway. They wouldn't fit in that bucket. So we always had about the right size gopher to eat, but they were extremely good. They can get serious while you're cooking them there for the first hour or so, but they are very good and very nutritious. that's gopher to me. I mean, some of these other folks has had some gopher too.
No, but I know you have a squirrel story.
Me?
You.
I better not tell that again. Why, she got on me last night about talking about that squirrel. She didn't hardly want to eat supper with me last night after I told about the squirrel. For you folks, you might not enjoy this, but I think it's quite cute. My wife and I, we first got married. That's been about 100 years ago or something like that. And when I was a kid, we always go out and kill squirrels. We clean them and come home. We separate the young ones from the old ones, and we fry the young squirrel. So we always left the heads on them. I don't know whether anybody likes squirrel head or not, but that is some of the best part of the squirrel. You got to leave them eyes in him too while you do that too. But anyhow, I went and killed a nice mess of squirrels, come home, and told my wife, I said, I got these picked out. When I get back to work, now you have these cooked. So I come back in. She had been a-cooking a while on my squirrels. She put them in the pan, and she'd raise the lid, and that squirrel, he'd be looking out at her, and she'd put the lid down and run to the bathroom. She'd done that for a while. Finally, she told the good Lord, if she ever got no squirrels cooked, she'd never cook another squirrel for Victor Buckles. And she has lived up to that all these years. She won't even let my grandson and I cook them in the house anymore.
Well, I'll tell you what, now, he's not wrong about that. My wife's grandfather was born and raised down there in Clarksville, Florida. And they take that old squirrel, they put him in a big pot of rice.
Yeah.
A lot of salt and pepper, and put him in that pot of rice with his head on. I can remember Grandpa sitting at that table in there, crunch.
Pop that head over. Pop that little piece of brain out of there.
I get up, leave the table.
That was the best part of the squirrel.
I said, Grandpa, what are you doing? He says, boy, you don't know what's good, do you? It's all what you used to eating. That's what it counts, you know. I talk to people about eating them garfish and making shark jerky and things like that. They said, you're crazy, man. I said, don't knock it unless you tried it.
Now, what does a gar look like in?
He's that big long thing with the spots on. He's got a big long nose. Looks like one of them backarudas, you know. Mouthful of teeth. They have a gar tournament over there in the Choctahatchee River, I think, about every year. But they're a fine fish, as far as I'm concerned.
Marinelle tells me you have another fish-eating story. You caught something, and you ate it before you found out it was a record or something like that.
Yeah, that was a gar.
Was it a gar?
Yeah, I caught a gar over there about a month and a half ago. He was 54 inches long, weighed 30.5 pounds. And I said, ooh, look at all them steaks. So I unzipped him out of that thing with my doggone wire cutters and or tin snips, and I took them big loins out of the back of him, about that big round, about that long. And man, I made me some gar balls up and made me a big bunch of gar stew. And I took a picture of it, and I carried that picture up there and showed the game freshwater fishman, one of the biologists. He says, man, he said, don't you know the record is only 27 pounds? I said, he sure was good.
That's tasty.
Bobby.
Uh-huh.
You being an old Georgia boy and used to live out amongst them woods, was you ever about going turkey hunting? Yes, during the spring of the year when the old gobbler's done a little gobbling?
I've been, but I am the most unluckiest turkey hunter you have ever met in your life. I get too fascinated with them, and I want to look.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't do a lot of looking, I found out. So I hadn't been too lucky at that.
Well, I remember when I was a young fellow, it's just been in the last few years that they legalized that gobbler during the spring of the year. We used to kind of, some of the boys used to kind of slip out once in a while, and we'd try to get one. An old gobbler is kind of like a young fellow. During the spring of the year, he don't have too much sense. So we'd go out there, and we'd kill a few turkeys, and we'd come back home. Finally, they made it legal. So I went out the next season, and I killed me a gobbler, and I grabbed him up, and I run a half a mile before I said, what am I running for? They done made this thing legal here now.
Run the feathers off.
I done drug the feathers off going through the brushes. Now, he might be out there listening.
I went turkey hunting one morning down here south of Quincy, down in what they call the old Rock Comfort Ranch. I had Maury Najjar with me then. He was the editor of the Florida Wildlife magazine, and Herb Brinkley. We got in there a long way before daylight. We was going to get in there and get them turkeys coming down off their roost. And Herb, he could charm a turkey out of the woods 15 miles if they could hear him. So we put Maury across over there on the other side of the field and said, now, Maury, you stay here. We're going down this little point of land, and we're going to get them turkeys to come to us. When they do, they're going to come right by you. We sat down there, and long about day, like, that turkey come down off that roost, and you're, old Herb said, boy, I mean, that thing started really giving a cane. That turkey went on by us, and another one went on by us, and it got broad daylight. Man, why come we ain't heard that gun over there, you know? We got up, walked over there, and here's four of the biggest old turkey gobbler tracks you want to see. Big strut mark where they've been dragging their wings going down through there. And there's old Morgan. They had done walk within 20 feet of that rascal four of them over a two-hour period of time. We never did take him hunting no more.
There's a gator grunter there.
Pretty much. Y'all missed that. Talking about
the
gators, you run them up.
This brings them in?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes you got to get inside the boat to do that because they run right on over you.
I first come to Florida back in late 40s and early 50s. I got a little 40.
You're not a native?
No, heck no. I was born in Missouri. I got a little old 40 down there. It's got a little swamp in it. And a neighbor of mine says, you know, you got the biggest alligator nest down there I've seen around these parts in years. Well, I was fresh down here. You know, I was still in the Navy back there then. You know, I hadn't retired out. And I said, I'm going to ease down and see what an alligator nest looks like. But they didn't tell me about them big female alligators, you know. Man, I went out through that tie swamp out there just to bust and brush, you know, and water up to my knees, and I was seeing this big mound in front of me. I said, my goodness, what a big old gopher hole, that old gopher nest that is. I looked over there, and there's all kinds of thrashings around that thing, you know. I looked, and there's little creepy, crawly things on about that long. Little yellow spotted things, you know what they look like. I got over real close to them, and I looked over there in them tie ties, and here come about a 9-foot mama with red in her eyes, up on her front feet like that. She had raised herself completely off of the ground. I mean her tail, too. You ever see a 9-foot gator with his tail off the ground, blood in its eyes, pointed your way? Whew. I had a new access to that swamp right there because I didn't even slow down. Now, I guess that place is still back in there because I ain't never been back in there, and that's been 30 years ago. Might well be because they live to be an old gator.
Yeah, they do.
Help!
Suey, huh?
I don't know if they're liable to come to that call.
Well, this might be a good place to pause and